I think the best founders I've met around the world can both go wide and go deep. And I also require my direct report, the leadership in AirWallet can both go wide and go deep. A lot of people kind of challenge me on like blockchain or crypto. My answer is you cannot be faster than instant. You cannot be cheaper than free. So what problem are you solving?
Hello, everyone, and welcome to FinTech Leaders, coming to you from New York City. I'm your host, Miguel Armaza. I'm a co-founder of Gilgamesh Ventures, a venture capital fund that backs early-stage fintech entrepreneurs in the U.S. and Latin America. If you enjoyed this conversation, I invite you to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your show so more people can learn about FinTech Leaders. In this episode, I sit down with Jack Zhang, CEO and co-founder of AirWallet, a global payments and treasury giant that moves over $7 billion in monthly transaction volume and serves 100,000 clients around the world, including Brex, Rippling, and Shein. Founded in Melbourne in 2015, AirWallet was last valued at $5.5 billion and has raised almost $900 million from Sequoia, DST, SquarePeg, GreenOak, MasterCard, Tencent, Salesforce, and many more. In this episode, we discuss how opening a coffee shop led him to co-found a global payments network, why AirWallet prioritizes people with great leadership skills who are also technical and can code, the impact of AI in financial services and new risks of AI-powered financial fraud, partnering and working with almost 100 banks around the world, and a lot more. Jack, welcome to FinTech Leaders. Glad you're joining us all the way from Hong Kong, if I have it right. Is that correct?
Yeah, thanks for inviting me to this podcast.
Yeah, I'm excited to hear about AirWallet, but before we go there, let's hear a bit about your personal story. I know you have quite an interesting personal story, but also more interesting is how AirWallet came to be. So maybe take us through your journey for a couple of minutes.
I was born in China, moved to Australia when I was 15, did my high school and college there. And working in sort of investment banking slash trading for close to a decade before I found AirWallet. Also, like having invested and then started close to a dozen businesses in architecture, design, project management, real estate, retail, franchise. And one of the businesses that I founded or invested in is a kind of coffee business. Think about it, it's like a blue bottle in Australia. Through that business, we were purchasing coffee beans from Brazil, from Indonesia, and packages from China. And we have experienced very high fees and bad user experience and international payments. And that's how we found the problem of cross-border payment. And that leads to me and my college friend founded AirWallet to solve this problem.
How was that conversation? How you go from running a coffee shop, at least for your co-founders, to building a payments business? They couldn't be any more different operationally.
My background is in banking and trading for close to a decade, so I know FX trading pretty well. So I've been building market making, algorithm trading, FX engines for multiple times. So I know that pretty well. And we all kind of, me and my co-founder are engineers, and we spend time to understand how correspondent banking slash the SWIFT system works. The system is built in the 1970s, and it's been over 50 years. And the entire network is built on top of a bunch of banks that had bilateral relationship. For example, if I wanted to send money from National Australia Bank to a bank in São Paulo, these two banks are unlikely to have a bilateral relationship, so that will go through intermediary correspondent banks like Citi or Bank of America, then maybe go to Itaú, and then go to this bank in São Paulo. So I think the smaller the bank you try to send the payment to, the more likelihood that you're going to have more intermediary banks in the middle, which were charging fees and slow down the process and prone for error and increasing the cost of compliance as well. So yeah, we kind of came from engineer background. So we look at it from a first principle perspective. If there's real-time payment system around the world, like NPP in Australia or Faster Payments in the UK or FPS in Hong Kong or Fast in Singapore. So if we can basically connect to all these local clearing systems through the central bank and interconnect them into a global network, then we should be able to get rid of all the intermediary banks and then ultimately reducing the fees and increasing efficiency. Vision is to basically moving money globally real time, and which we're already doing that for more than half of the transactions we process today, and that will move into more than 80% of our transaction this year.
So given that you were Australia-based, I'm guessing initially you started with Australian customers. Take us through your global evolution. So you've served customers that have global transactions from day one, but I'm guessing you didn't always have customers all over the world that evolved over time. So take us through that evolution.
Australia is a fairly small market, so that it's very hard to build a global unicorn just focus on Australian market. So we had to think about going global from day one. And the business that we are operating in is highly regulated. So that to connect to the local clearing infrastructure that requires to be regulated in almost every single country that we can clear the funds. And then we applied licensing in Australia and Hong Kong first. Then later on that we expanded to UK, Europe, Singapore, North America, and then LATAM and some of the Southeast Asia countries or Japan as well. So I think the licensing process generally take years. For example, there's to getting money transmitter license in the US, you have to go through regulators each of the 50 states. And that took us more than 4.5 years. So we're basically using, I guess, partners or global banks initially that to build an initial network. Then over time, as we're getting licenses ourselves, we went direct with all the countries that to clearing funds directly and gradually build out the network. From a go-to-market point of view, we started with Australia, Hong Kong. Then later on that, we expanded to Singapore, UK, Europe, and then North America as well. So largely, we kind of follow that path from APAC to go global.
Okay, so we're going to go back to your global expansion in a minute, but let's talk about your background as an engineer. You mentioned you, not just you and your co-founder as well, you're engineers. And I have heard actually from people in the company that you still get involved in some of the kind of code, and you can go very detailed when it comes to customer conversations and explain to them why does the platform do this and that. And that's probably because of your engineering background and probably because you were involved in coding the platform from scratch at the beginning. Is that the case?
Yeah, so I wouldn't claim I'm the best engineers in the world. I definitely have both the business side and also the engineering side. And I oversee our product and commercial in the company, and to a certain extent, the regulatory stuff as well, and licensing, and partner with our general counsel. And my co-founder / CTO lead more the engineering side. I only coded for the first year when we founded AirWallex, and I haven't wrote code for the last 8 years, unfortunately. And I'm still quite involved in customer conversations and design and product design and APR design. So that meant just sort of providing a best sort of customer experience, and then I'm very deeply involved in that.
What advantages does it bring to have a CEO who is also an engineer? It's not the most frequent. It happens, but it's not super frequent.
Yeah, I think the best founders I've met around the world can both go wide and go deep. And I also require my direct report, the leadership in AirWallet can both go wide and go deep. there's a lot of people, once they become managers or leaders, they become this, they have this generalized skill set. They kind of can do everything, but they can't go deep in many things, which probably doesn't really work at Airwallex. So every leader here in Airwallex need to be an individual contributor first. For example, if you're an engineer manager, you need to be the best engineer in the team. And also you're able to communicate with stakeholders well. And then you have a sense of product, building product, and then sense of customers. And then you become the engineer manager. But before you become the leader in a company, you have to be one of the best coders. And that's generally our philosophy. And that's been the philosophy from day one. And we just keep the very high bar that every single leader in a company can always go deep.
Sounds like that is one of the defining pillars of the culture of Airwallex. What else would you say is important for you, for the company, when it comes to culture?
I think curiosity and then sort of customer mindset and craftsmanship is also extremely important, because we're building infrastructure, programmatic money movement and payments and credit card processing, issuing, right? So we're probably one of the very few companies in the world that have built a global infrastructure that penetrated both of the bank-to-bank network and also the credit card network and the wallet network. That kind of breaking the barrier between a bank transaction or a wallet or card transaction. So, and to do that, you kind of have to make sure that you set up a foundation that can scale. And when you build your API, that you need to think about not just one use cases, but many, many use cases. And because the industry is highly regulated, you have to think about compliance as well. So it's kind of the complexity is not just customers. So the complexity is a combination of engineering, technology, compliance and regulatory and customer requirements. So that I would say that's kind of how you describe building the Airwallex product. You're operating in a just very complicated environment, because the regulation is so different in every single country around the world. There's capital control in countries like Indonesia, Korea, China. There's complicated regulatory challenges in Europe, like a GDPR, or there's data issues in India, in Indonesia, in China. So all this, there's a lot of data sovereignty issues, and now sort of US as well, so that you have to make sure that you think very deep on the data sovereignty issue. And you also need to think about, because the payment network is a real-time payment system, and then this to do with moving money, you need to be highly secured and also real-time, right? So you have data centers. We have data centers around the world. So when people paying online with a credit card, that we're able to immediately respond based on their request and then try to give our customer a better authorization rate on the credit card transaction. So these are just examples of the complexity that involve in building this infrastructure.
Jack, for Airwallex to deliver its service, you have to partner with all sorts of players around the world, incumbents, fintechs, networks. And there's often this narrative, it's banks versus fintechs, but I don't think you agree with that. Do you have any opinions about kind of how to think about the financial industry when it comes to banks and fintechs, and then the role that they play in the field?
Yeah, I think Airwallex partner with more than 80 banks around the world, whether it's JP Morgan, Standard Chartered, Barclays, or Deutsche. There's very few banks we actually not partner with. And we had to work with them closely in every single country, so that in a lot of the country, they are the sponsor for us to access the local clearing system. And then generally in every single country, we need not more than one provider, because we need to have redundancy when this one bank are not having technical issues or not online, or they have different risk appetites. We need to be able to write our transaction that comply with not only the regulation, but also the risk appetite of the bank. And for us to build such strong partnership with so many banks around the world, we have to be fully transparent, highly compliant with our approach, and then also kind of keep a very reasonable risk appetite in our customer base and the type of flow that we supporting that so that our network can scale. We went from doing a couple million dollar transaction in early 2018 now to close to $7 billion on a monthly basis in terms of transaction volume. And this is only in a matter of 6 years, right? So it took 3 years for us to build network and then kind of bootstrap the network. But you know, once you're able to do that and it's highly scalable, I think that's kind of the way I think about the partnership with banks. And I think ultimately the banks in the sort of a balance sheet business where Air Wallets is in a transaction and a software, but we all kind of have our role to play that I think we are better than the incumbents in sort of delivering a better customer experience. For example, if you get onboarded or KYC by Air Wallets, you can create bank accounts around the world to immediately start transacting where the infrastructure is actually powered by 80 plus banks, right? And ultimately, we partner together to delivering the much better experience for our customers. If you're a merchant in Australia, you wanted to sell in the US, you can have a bank account immediately. You can issue a corporate card, whether in US dollar or in Aussie dollar, if you want to pay the vendors or software subscriptions. You have the software stack to manage your treasury, your cash. You can invest in the multi-currency, sort of AAA graded JP Morgan money market fund to manage your cash. You can, if you wanted to sell online as well on Shopify, for example, we allow you to process your credit card transaction and through wallet as well. So you kind of have that single platform with a kind of unique proposition of that enable you to operating globally, that everything you need from a sort of payments and finance point of view that you can access that through Air Wallets without kind of going through multiple platforms traditionally. I think that's the value that we kind of differentiating from banks and then also how we partner with banks.
So part of the story today of Air Wallets is that you've grown in complexity and you've measured regulation a couple times already, and being global means you have to deal with all sorts of financial regulators. Maybe tell us about that approach and what kind of relationship do you have, if any, with different regulators, and what have you learned about dealing with different regulation around the world?
Yeah, that's an interesting question because we regulate in like so many different markets, right? Australia, New Zealand, Singapore, Hong Kong, China, India, Japan, UK, Europe, Canada, and US across 50 states. And we bought companies in Mexico, for example. So then also a lot of the countries that we cannot apply license, for example, Mexico, we want to speed up the licensing process. We bought a company in Hong Kong. They generally don't issue new licenses. In China, it's the same. We bought a company for over 100 million on Hong Kong dollar in Hong Kong just for the license and took another close to 3 years to get approval just to change the control. And it is quite a complicated process. In Australia, we are regulated by both AUSTRAC and ASIC, and we are going to be regulated in the future by EPRA and RBA, which is a central bank. So you kind of think about in one country, you have four regulators. And in Hong Kong, we're regulated by as MSOs, so money service businesses, but also we have a store value facility, which is a wallet license regulated by Hong Kong MA. We are also getting an investment license going to be regulated by SFC. So it is a very complicated regulatory infrastructure, which is kind of our superpower. Because we're so good at building product, building innovation, but at the same time, keep it transparent with the regulators and compliant with the laws and the regulations around the world. I think the biggest lesson there is to just full transparency and then that not sort of withhold any information so that kind of surprise later so that you're not building that trust and then confidence with different regulators around the world. So we very sort of generally proactive in our approach of meeting regulators and communicating with regulators, and then also being transparent about our approach to launching the product. And that I think that's largely how we are able to build a very kind of, I would say, great relationship with different regulators around the world.
Speaking of regulators, something that some central banks around the world have been spearheading is real-time payments networks. We have UPI in India, we have Pix in Brazil, and several others that you've actually mentioned. Now, these are at a local level. Some of these real-time payment networks are actually about to become interoperable, and they're actually, they might start becoming real-time payment networks that are also crossing borders. In a world where that becomes table stakes, how does that change the landscape?
I think we have already integrated with all the real-time payment systems around the world. You know, I mentioned a couple, and you mentioned a couple as well, like NPP, Fast, Faster Payment, SEPA Instant, now FedNow in the US, and then UPI India, Pix in Brazil, etc. Right? So Interact in Canada. So there's so many out of them now that we already kind of fully integrated. So that I think as a fintech, we're innovating faster and we focus on the customer experience a lot more than incumbents. And we're able to faster to the market so that we're able to get more market share as the first, as a leader in this space. I see some of this cross-border kind of partnership as well, but I haven't seen anything that meaningful yet, because essentially you're talking about a couple of countries work together, a couple of central bank work together. So it's a quite a complicated process and it's going to be very slow. So I think ultimately it might happen, but in a sort of small scale, I can't see any signs of sort of large scale global cooperation in the current sort of super complicated geopolitical landscape.
So you're telling us Airwallex is that glue amongst all the local real-time payment networks?
Correct. So essentially, we're not only just connecting to the RTPs, which is the real-time payment networks, but we're also connecting to the ACH, the RTGS equivalent of the world, right? So that you have the option to use both RTP, because some of the RTP have limit on the transaction amount, sort of size. And then you need to fall back into the ACH of the world. And then sometimes you need transacting even larger amount of real time. You need to use the RTGS of the world. I think that it's not just simply like using RTP. I think it's just about providing that optionality for our customer to serve the purpose of that transaction. And also that it's not just the access of the network. It's right. You also have to build orchestration layer on top of that. We have a large customer in the US called Rippling, which is a payroll business. We help them to launch international payroll in like UK, Australia, etc. That we need to providing them API to onboarding customers onto their platform. So we basically provide embedded onboarding because we ultimately, we're the regulated entity. So we basically leveraging our regulatory infrastructure to help them to onboarding customers. Then we allow them to connecting the external bank account of that customer to pull money through direct debit to fund the payroll. And some of the payroll is domestic, some of the payroll is cross-border. So you could do FX or you could just do straight payout to fund the payroll. Then you need to, sometimes you need to cancel some of the payrolls, and sometimes you need to, the direct debit failed, you need to figure out maybe how to delay the transaction. So it's quite a complicated, and you have to do reconciliation as well, which is cross-currency reconciliation. So it's quite a complicated orchestration layers on top of the money movement network. And sometimes you need to fund it not just through bank account, you need to fund by credit card, you need to fund by wallet. It is a lot more complicated than people kind of think. And then you have fraud issues, you have to do transaction monitoring, you have to do name screening, risk management. So it's so much more you build around it on top of this money movement structure.
I want to go back to talk about the complexity, but from a slightly different point of view. And that's more about a complex organization with 1,400 employees. How do you keep everyone focused and rowing in the same direction? I've heard Elon Musk describe it as he thinks of an employee as a group of vectors, and he just tries to keep every vector pointing in the same direction. How do you achieve this at Airwallex?
Because we in so many countries, is very distributed. So it's so multicultural, so diversified. And the only way to do that is basically become like loosely coupled and then kind of localize as much as you can. So we're using kind of a general manager model. So we have a general manager for EMEA, a general manager for Americas, a general manager for APAC. So our general manager is unlike in a traditional global company, you manage sales. So our general manager is more like a mini CEO of the region. So they're managing marketing, legal, compliance, regulatory relationship, looking at M&A opportunities. So they kind of like almost like an independent operating company, but, you know, highly aligned on the vision but loosely coupled in terms of day-to-day operation.
Jack, we cannot have this conversation without talking about AI and AI's impact on the future of fintech and financial services. Maybe tell us, first of all, how are you leveraging some of this latest, I'm talking the last 18 months, right? Some of this latest innovations that have become very visible, mainstream, within the company, within their wallets, and then we can talk more macro.
Yeah, I think the impact of AI is going to be a lot more on the software side than the infrastructure side. I think end of the day, money movement is moving a dollar from country A to country B. The ultimate experience is real time and it's free, which we already achieved that. We're moving close to actually $200 billion this year. And that 80% of over 80% of the transaction is going to be real time. And we're doing that for customer for free right now. So a lot of people kind of challenge me on like blockchain or crypto. My answer is you cannot be faster than instant. You cannot be cheaper than free. So what problem are you solving? I think on AI, I think the biggest impact is on the software layer and also the operating of the company. So there's different copilot that we are building in AirWallex is that you can have copilot running code faster. You can build much better customer support. You can have AI assist in almost every single role in the company. You could have a tech support AI that, for example, I onboarded, I'm a new employee. I started a company today. I don't know how to, I can't find this stuff. I don't know how to install this software. I just asked the tech support AI, right? How to get me better onboarded. I'm a salesperson. I wanted to understand the product of the company. Then I just asked the product AI to kind of give me a broader knowledge that I used to have to spend days to figure out where those information get located. And you have to kind of ask your friends, or your colleague in the company to kind of tell you where that is. Now the AI can do most of the work for you. So the learning curve is become much shorter. The efficiency become much greater. On customer support, for example, that when customer reach out, the AI can respond a lot better than 18 months or 24 months ago with generative AI. And that's only get better. You can create a knowledge base, apply different LLM models to just train them better. You can even create like sub brands that to categorize the different type of issues and train them specifically, providing better answers for that category of the problems. On the product side, that you can, especially when you wanted to do, because we have so much data in AirWallex around your self office about your finance, you could just say, hey, generate, give me the cash flow forecast for the next 12 months, and, you know, filter down into X, Y country, filter down to this team that immediately kind of give you that outcome that you deserve, that instead of like try to figure out multiple filters and try to figure out across that multiple entities. And that is just possible, right? So I think a lot of the, I would say, ad hoc work in the organization and also from a customer point of view in the finance team will become streamlined and automated. I think that is the most amazing thing gonna happen in the short term. Right, long term is a bit harder to predict. It just really depends on how AI gonna evolve. I mean, I don't think many people in the world kind of understand where that's kind of going in the next decade. And then anything could happen, to be honest.
Are you worried about the role of generative AI when it comes to financial fraud?
Yeah, definitely. I've seen some deepfake already in one of the countries. So that a fraudster pretended to be the bank, had a call with the customer, right? And onboarded the customer and moved the money away, right? So that you talking about like a deepfake AI in a video that kind of pretending to be like a bank that working is the underlying infrastructure provider of AirWallex, and it's basically pitching to customers, say, hey, can you open an AirWallex account that we're going to provide in the underlying service. It's like a Zoom call. It's quite scary. And we still like in the process of improving our algorithms with that. Cause when we're onboarding a customer, we do liveness check, right? We need to be able to identify, is that a real person or is that a deep fake? So it's definitely challenging there. We haven't seen like fraud at scale yet. We generally, once we see like one or two fraud and in different pattern, our system are good enough to be able to pick it up, and then we can fast iterative to respond to that. And that's hopefully going to keep that way.
Yeah, it's certainly scary. Yet at the same time, we're seeing new companies get created to fight this type of fraud. So it never stops. Jack, let me ask you, I noticed that aside from building and running AirWallex, on the side, you've also raised a little bit of money to invest in kind of the next generation of founders, be it whether they're ex-AirWallex or not. Tell me a bit about that and why do it.
Yeah, so it's an ecosystem fund called Capital 49. And the idea is to back companies in AirWallex ecosystem, whether it's a fintech or software companies that wanted to ultimately change the world and providing a better consumer or business experiences. And then to back great founders. And ultimately, AirWallex vision is to be the single platform to empower modern businesses to grow beyond border, to operating in a sort of digital native world without the constraint of traditional infrastructure. And then part of that is to help them to access the capital. So we are in the process of launching our credit product, and then we have the VC fund, all kind of different ways of to enable our customer to grow that business to operating beyond the traditional constraints of the infrastructure. So I think we just wanted to figure out a better way to partner with the customers and the partners in our ecosystem. And that's why we set it up.
Got it. So make sure it stays within the ecosystem.
And also, you know, if they succeeded, right, then we will get the upside as well.
Yeah, makes sense. Yeah, I hear very often from companies that like, oh, I was the design partner of so-and-so, and now they're a huge global company. I wish I would have had some upside, not just a great deal on the contract, right? Maybe some equity upside.
Yeah, I mean, Shein is a very early customer, right? So from 2016, and I wished I've invested the Series A of Shein. I mean, now they're close to $100 billion. So hopefully we're able to make some great bet in the coming years.
Yeah, and you mentioned Shein being one of your customers. Maybe before we go, tell us a little bit about your typical customers today. You started with a use case of coffee shops, and I'm sure you had some, and maybe still do, some coffee shops as customers. But also today, you're focused on very big accounts as well.
Yeah, so we have two business lines, right? One is we call financial operating system, that which is the give you that kind of global banking, but also software experiences to empower the CFO office, whether it's expense management, reimbursement, treasury management, subscription, anything that you need to do for paying and payout and managing your cash and manage your financial operation for your global business, right? So that we servicing like e-commerce, technology companies, startups, tech-savvy professional services, travel companies, et cetera, right? So that's one part of our business. We generally servicing between like a few employee company to a few thousand employee companies with both our infrastructure and software offering. Then on the other side, we have this embedded finance, embedded payments platform we call Scale, our AirWallet for platform, that is to enable company like Brex or Rippling or Jeeves or Airbase, Gusto or Build.com, these type of companies to build product and services for their customers globally. We have enabled great companies like different payroll companies, fintech companies, marketplaces, all sort of with very complicated money movement and regulatory sort of complexity as well, that to help them to go global and then build a better customer experience for that customer, right? So that's also been quite successful globally for us.
Well, Jack, thanks for taking the time at a late hour from Hong Kong, and congratulations on the journey of AirWallex so far. I know it's almost your 10-year anniversary. You're about 9 years there, but it sounds like this is just the beginning.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity for me to chat. And I think generally people, so I say this to a lot of my friends and investors. So generally people think, oh, you know, fintech is a massive market, right? There's a lot of opportunities, but they generally don't realize fintech is also a low margin, highly complicated business. And then to creating a scalable, sort of profitable fintech business, you need massive scale. Because for you build something, you need to deal with a lot of risks. You need to deal with transaction monitoring, you need to deal with regulatory, you need to build like ledger system, core banking system. And obviously there's more and more tools out there to help you to solve some of this problem, especially in the United States. But to do this globally, you still have to build a lot of this stuff in-house, especially when you want to achieve the best customer experience. So again, fintech is it's something that if you wanted to create a massive business, you need scale, all the capital to do so. I think we're quite fortunate. We're in a position that we can scale now with kind of a bit of a network effect. So I think also people generally underestimate the upside once you have scale for fintech. I think there's a dozen fintechs out there in the world. I believe a lot of them are going to become $100 billion businesses in the next decade and 20 years. It's slower than some of the traditional companies or startups, I would say, like Airbnbs or TikTok. They consumer business generally have a bit of a viral effect, where a lot of the fintech, especially B2B fintech, it took longer, but it's massive upside over the next decade. I think also people underestimating the ability for those companies to scale.
I love that. It's a dose of optimistic realism. It's hard not to be optimistic and bullish about fintech, but also you got to be aware of the limits and boundaries of fintech. Being a regulated business, you can't just move fast and break things.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, Jack. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Miguel.
Thanks for tuning in. I hope you enjoyed this great episode with Jack, CEO of AirWallex. If you want more interviews, make sure to subscribe, follow, and leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or whatever you get your shows. It helps, truly means a lot. And if you have any suggestions or thoughts about the show, please drop me a line on Twitter or LinkedIn. Signing off till next week, I'm your host, Miguel Armazo.